Hello, Charles.
Hi, Con. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I am live, well, not live, I'm taped live here at CPAC at the Marriott here in Washington. This is my first time actually at the Marriott. For years it's been at the Omni, but I have stolen a room in which we can sit down and have a blog and his conversation.
All right, great. Well, hope no room service person comes in and interrupts us.
No, it's a rival room, and you are of course Charles Johnson of Little Green Football is out there in Santa Monica, correct?
Actually, it's not Santa Monica; somewhere else in Los Angeles. Prefer not to say so that to keep the stalkers guessing, you know.
Well, either way, it's a much beautiful locale than Washington D.C. I think we can say that.
Well, there's some nice parts of Washington, D.C.
Will you at least let me establish the fact that it's a much warmer place than Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. Okay, I'll grant you that.
Okay, good.
It's a little chilly today because it's raining, but...
I don't even want to know what you think is chilly.
Keep throwing in those caveats here.
Okay, well, like I said, I am here at the CPAC conference. This is day two of the conference, so I did not get to see Marco Rubio, the senatorial candidate, yesterday, or the surprise Dick Cheney appearance yesterday, or Mitt Romney and his Scott Brown introduction.
Oh, that so I missed all the good stuff.
not all the good stuff. I got to see Michelle Bachmann speak today, and we had Rush Limbaugh live by satellite. Presenting an award to Ed Morrissey for the CPAC Blogger of the Year. So that's exciting. We had John Ashcroft speak, and Mike Pence is supposed to speak later today. So we still got some headline names here on day two.
I've been watching it on C-SPAN myself. I just happened to turn it on just as Michelle Bachmann was starting. So I've been joining the festivities and posting live video at Little Green Footballs from Ustream, which is streaming the whole thing live. So I've been sort of paying attention to it. I was just wondering if you had happened to have encountered the John Birch Society's booth while you're there.
You know what? I probably would not have, except I knew I was going to be talking to you. So I did swing by their booth, and I picked up some John Birch Society swag just for you.
Well, I hear that all the conference attendees are getting a DVD by the John Birch Society.
I'll show you what we got. We got a little bag here. I'm holding up. We have a number of CDs here, I mean DVDs here. We have Man, Freedom, and Government, Public Service Edition, John Birch Society. Mm-hmm. We've got Exposing Terrorism, Inside the Terror Triangle by the John Birch Society.
Right.
And the European Union, Could It Happen Here?
Yes.
Also, then of course, you know, a bunch of different brochures and flyers, all from the famous, infamous, however you want to view it, John Birch Society. So, I know you're sensitive about your address, but if you really want to, I will send all this great John Birch Society swag to you.
No, you know what? I've actually seen more than enough already to form an opinion about them. I'm just wondering if you have any. I mean, what do you feel about the fact that they're obviously a prominent part of this event? Does that bother you at all?
I don't know if they're necessarily prominent. I mean, I know you keep saying they're a co-sponsor on your site, but they have a booth, which is one of hundreds of booths.
Well, they're listed on the CPAC website as a co-sponsor. That's why I call them a co-sponsor.
Right, and they are. And just so the other, you know, the people at the blogins know what this means. I mean, they just have one booth of many. So, for example, there's also the Poker's Players Alliance, whose brochure I'm
but
holding.
But how does that affect the presence of the John Birch Society there?
Oh, it doesn't.
I mean,
I can't help but feel that
William F. Buckley must be spinning in his grave to see the John
Birch
Society.
There's a wide variety of conservative organizations and groups here. Particularly, we got a Greg Raymer, World Series of Poker biography here. So yeah, right. they are one of many people here at the the CPAC conference. Not one of many groups. And right. I think as I was reading through their literature and what they were stressing, I think why they have been kind of accepted back in is that they really are kind of a annex of the Ron Paul movement. Their big issue these days is auditing and dismantling the Federal Reserve System. And so they're big supporters of Ron Paul's auditing of the Federal Reserve.
That's one of their issues. That's one of their issues. Are you aware that the current top video at their website is by Alex Jones, 9/11 truther?
I have not been to the website. I just went to their booth because I knew you cared about what they were going to be featuring at their booth here.
I think it's outrageous that they're at CPAC, to be honest with you. I honestly do. And, you know, like I was saying, I feel that people like William F. Buckley would be spinning in their graves if they knew that, you know, if they could be aware that the John Birch Society had been brought back from the fringes to this extent that they're actually sharing a convention with major GOP politicians. I find it very worrisome and troublesome. This is a very disturbing group, and you can easily find evidence of it at their website right now. I mean, they're not even really hiding it. They're promoting all kinds of bad conspiracy theories and craziness of all stripes. So I find it very disturbing, and I just wonder if you have any opinion about whether they should have been disinvited or not allowed to attend the conference. I think that they should not have been allowed.
Well, when I first heard they were going to be allowed, I was definitely worrisome. But having visiting the booth and looked what's in their swag bag and what they're trying to push out, there was no trace of 9/11 truth or stuff in there. And it was mostly, like I said, it was mostly just kind of small government, Ron Paul's type stuff,
okay,
Ron Paul type people.
But you know what the John Birch Society's history is, don't you? I mean, you can say that they didn't show up with any controversial material. Well, of course they wouldn't. They know that the media is going to be watching them. You know, I find that not to be a very good excuse, the fact that they don't promote any of their crazier stuff at this event as a reason why they should be allowed to attend. So, you know, I think we're going to have to disagree on this one strongly because I really, really think that they shouldn't be there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a delicate dance the conservative movement and the Republican Party has to play is that you definitely are going to want to capitalize on a lot of the Ron Paul anti-Fed sentiment out there. But there are a lot of Ron Paul anti-Fed sentiment people out there that have little views that are not necessarily mainstream all the time.
Do you think it might be possible to make an argument, though, that, for example, after William F. Buckley marginalized people like Pat Buchanan and the John Birch Society and really made them into pariah organizations, that was the point at which the modern conservative movement really actually began to become a force in politics. And I think that that forcing the extremists out to the edges really gave the conservative movement a legitimacy that it's in great danger of completely forfeiting at this point.
Yeah, and you know I understand your concerns, and I know your concerns for the well-being of the conservative movement are very sincere. But you know we have close to 200 booths here or so at CPAC, and they're one booth. And I understand people who want to slander the conservative movement try to make it seem like they're a major force, but they're just one small item in a longer.
How would you feel if
in a larger poker players alliance conservative universe?
I understand what you're saying, but how would you feel if you saw a left wing organization, say that had a booth promoting, Hamas maybe or a 9/11 truth organization? Would you think it was fair to criticize this organization for allowing these people to attend?
Well, if they're actually pointing terrorists, which I don't think John Birch Society does, if it was a straight-out 9/11 truth organization, yeah, definitely. And you know, I growing up in Oakland, California, I visited or went to tons of events that had the International Answer and
I've covered a lot of those. Yeah, I know. That there's some extreme stuff at left-wing organizations, and that's why I've criticized it quite a bit over the years, and that's why I think I really, to be consistent here, I think to see the John Birch Society being so brought back into the mainstream so much that they're actually sharing a convention with people like, you know, Newt Gingrich and Tim Pawlenty and Michelle Bachmann and all these major GOP politicians. I think it's just outrageous. I really do. And I'm this is one of the reasons why I wrote my now infamous post about why I parted ways with the right. I can't agree with this. This is where I draw the line.
Well, everyone has their different picadillos as to where they draw the lines. And one small booth at a very large conference is not going to ruin my day or my other mm-hmm. beliefs that I share with conservatives.
Uh-huh. That's good. It has ruined my beliefs in the conservative movement, and I have a very strong feeling, having read William F. Buckley's book In Search of Anti-Semitism and some of the stuff that he wrote about the John Birch Society. I know that he wouldn't even recognize a movement that would allow the John Birch Society to be part of it. And I'm disappointed, very disappointed in what's happened here.
That is definitely your view. It's interesting that you make it such an important part of it. I mean, I just mm-hmm. saw David Weigel down in the convention floor. And,
yes.
Of course, he was key in that whole James O'Keefe Salon racist story, which you also jumped all over. Do you want to share with the readers what that was all about and why that so upset you?
Well, James O'Keefe I forget the exact date. I think it was it was in the 2000s, I believe. Attended an event that was that featured a speaker from a group called American Renaissance, which is a pretty openly white nationalist group. If you go to their website, it's quite obvious. Just take one look and you'll see. And anyway, one of the speakers was Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. There were other speakers as well. One of them was a black conservative. One was John Derbyshire from the National Review. And the story came out that he'd attended this conference and it was promoted as if he were attending a white nationalist conference. Now,
right. So we're talking about the Salon Max Blumenthal One People's
yes.
Project report.
What's interesting, though, is that this didn't get a lot of coverage. But at Little Green Footballs, what I did was I went back and looked at American Renaissance and some of the websites themselves that were part of this conference to see what they wrote about it at the time. And it turns out that American Renaissance was heavily involved in the organization of the conference. Not only that, before the conference took place, there was quite a controversy about it. The Southern Poverty Law Center lodged a protest and tried to publicize the fact that Jared Taylor was going to be attending, because he's notorious. He's what they call a racialist, one of these academic racists who tries to come up with academic justifications for believing that certain people of color are less capable than white people. And so the Southern Poverty Law Center protested this event. And as it turns out, I actually think that calling this a white nationalist conference is an accurate description. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
When I first read about it, this was being debated and disputed because of the attendance of John
Derbyshire. Because David Weigel, who unlike you was actually there, called it a debate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, it was a debate that was
organized by white nationalists. You weren't there, but you're going to go ahead and say that it was a conference.
It was a debate that was organized by white nationalists. You can see them talking about the organization on their website. It's right there. They talked about it beforehand, and afterward they filed a report on it. And it's quite clear that they were involved in the very basic organization of the event. That's why I would think it's accurate to call it a white nationalist conference.
Okay.
You can white nationalist debate. Let's be accurate, because reading the reports, I don't know if it was even a debate, because what happened was that there were three speakers. They didn't actually debate each other.
Right. And of course, the Blumenthal article also said that James O'Keefe was manning a table of racist literature.
Yeah,
have you changed your mind on that, or do you still say that that's not true?
That could not be proven, and that's what I wrote at my website, that the people who made that claim, it's incumbent on them to back it up at this point or to withdraw it.
Which, of course, they haven't, because
They haven't, because it was probably not true. But regardless of whether it's true or not, I think the description of the event as a white nationalist conference, given that the organizers are indeed white nationalists,
And of course, your decision to focus on this is important, because it shows that James O'Keefe is racist, which means Andrew Breitbart's racist, which means the journalism's racist,
no.
which means the
no,
whole
no.
conservative movement.
Not at all. Not at all. My decision to focus on it was because it became a news story. And I wrote about it because it was news, and it would affected an issue that a lot of my readers had been following and taking part in. So that's one reason why I brought it up. I don't intend to smear anyone with an accusation, but if someone attends a white nationalist conference, I think it's fair enough to point that out.
Of course, calling it news is kind of generous. The Columbia Journalism Review has since come out with a statement saying that the Max Blumenthal's entire story was extremely irresponsible. So you know, to call Salon and Max Blumenthal, you know, journalists is a bit of a stretch.
You know, I would agree that there were some aspects of it that they didn't handle right. They should not have taken the image that had been cropped that the One People Now project, was that the name of the other people who promoted
the
story? The
One People's Project.
One People's Project. They claimed to have a picture of him, but what they published did not show him sitting at a booth. It showed him. It was cropped, just showing his basically a headshot. And Salon took that headshot and photoshopped it to put the American Renaissance logo behind it, which is you know, not very fair. On the other hand, it was a very obvious Photoshop. I mean, it was not like they were trying to fool anyone with something that was realistic, but. That's not fair, because the claim itself that he was at a table with American Renaissance literature has not been proven. So without proving that, absolutely, I agree that some of the aspects of the coverage initially were irresponsible.
Right,
I just thought it was interesting to point these things out.
I just thought it was interesting that you were so eager to tar this young man as a racist.
No, I wasn't eager at all to tar this young man as a racist. And, in fact, I didn't say that in my post. And, in fact, I've never called him a racist. But I've never used those words. So
okay, fair enough. We'll link to your posts, and the viewers can draw their own conclusions.
Yeah, they can see that I don't use the word racist. I said he attended a conference that was organized by a white nationalist group, which is the truth.
Fair enough. But speaking of media organizations trying to... tar the conservative movement. There was a plane incident yesterday in Austin,
oh, yeah.
Texas.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Joe Stack, who
got pissed off at the IRS. And
exactly.
His plane
well,
into
among
building.
Among other things, and I guess
among
I guess
a whole lot of things. Yeah,
among a whole lot of things.
We won't bore the viewers with the details.
I'm sure the viewers know the story. But I was interested in your take on whether or not Joe Stack is a terrorist or not. First we should note that for anyone who was watching MSNBC, you had, you know, Chris Matthews all day long trying to make this guy look like a conservative Tea Party mm-hmm. nut. And you know, Jonathan Capehart on the Washington Post come right out and say, oh, this guy sounds like a Tea Partier. So, you know, the mainstream media immediately wanted to tar this guy as a conservative. But when you go back and read his manifesto, it's just absolutely not true.
Yeah, well, if you notice, I didn't do that because I was...
I did notice.
I was very careful. You know, I've been covering events where some Tea Party people have been caught doing some things like stockpiling weapons, you know, or actually planning events, violent events. So this is not unheard of. But on the other hand, when this event came out and I started hearing some things about the suicide note, I decided I wasn't going to cover it until I'd actually read the note and seen what his justification was. And after reading it, I mean, he comes across as a general all-purpose kind of a kook who is,
here's my favorite passage. He writes, why is it that a handful of thugs and plunderers can commit unthinkable atrocities, and in the case of the GM executives, for scores of years, and when it's time for the gravy train to crash under the weight of their gluttony and overwhelming stupidity, the force of the full federal government has no difficulty coming to their aid within days, if not hours. Yet mm-hmm. at the same time, the joke we call the American medical system, including the drug and insurance companies, are murdering tens of thousands of people a year and stealing from the corpses of the victims they cripple, and this country's leaders don't see this as important as bailing out a few of their vile, rich cronies. Which is something you could read on Ezra Klein's blog. I mean, Ezra Klein has said that the Ben Nelsons and Liebermans of the world are killing thousands of Americans every year by not passing Obamacare.
Well, you know what this sounds like to me is one of those kind of far I don't know what you call it, far left, far right. They're sort of at that point where the right and the left join, wrap around and join each other. But one of those anti-tax groups, that's really where he got that rhetoric from. And, you know, I think there was some evidence that he was taking part in some meetings of some of these groups. So, I mean, this is a guy who had a hard life. You can see he really had some, he got beat up by the IRS and a whole lot of other people, and he decided that he was going to strike back. He snapped. And I don't see anything particularly left-wing or right-wing about it. Now, is he a terrorist? That's another interesting question, because he did it for a political reason, for his own political reason, to strike back against the people that he thinks are not only ruined his life, but if you read the manifesto, he believes that they're responsible for a whole lot of negative stuff in this country, too. So, but on the other hand, he wasn't part of a movement, and it's unlikely that he's going to inspire other people to do the same thing. So it's hard to, you know, he's on that line of, is he a terrorist or not? I mean, he did it for terroristic reasons, I would say. But calling him right or left wing is, you know, kind of pointless.
Yeah, I don't think he's a terrorist either. I mean, I'm interested. Would you think like Dylan Klebold and all those young male high school shooters?
Mm-hmm.
Would you call those acts of terrorism? Because they also meant to terrorize. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, they did. And again, you know, this is one of those, you know, if we're going to insist on a really by-the-book definition of terrorism, probably not, because, again, they're acting on their own. They're probably, well, in this case, they probably did inspire other people to do, if you're talking about
people. Yeah, because the shooters kind of did. I mean, you even have, you know, some people there's been some students in Germany, well, on the same lines, and the way they come in waves, they definitely feed off each other, but you definitely couldn't call it a movement.
Well, does all terrorism have to be political in nature? Probably not.
Well, I would say that in order for it to be called terrorism, it has to be attached to some larger ideology and identifiable movement group of people. And this guy definitely does not qualify that, as do not the high school shooters.
No, but I agree. You know, I think that there was a bit of a rush to call this guy a Tea Partier and an extremist, a right-wing extremist, that sort of thing. And in this case, I agree with you. I don't think he was. On the other hand, there have been some recent cases where, you know, there were people inspired by what you might call Tea Party ideology who've been arrested for various offenses.
Well, it's great to agree with you. Now, we got want to move on to another subject. You want to do the Mount Vernon statement or Sarah Palin next?
Well, one thing that I actually saw today that I thought was very interesting was Mickey Edwards has a statement or a post at one of the Atlantic's blogs. And Mickey Edwards is a former congressman for 16 years, and he chaired CPAC for 5 years. And he really has what you might call a Jacques piece about CPAC and about the modern conservative movement that's really quite powerful.
None of that is new. This is not the first time Mickey Edwards has made his differences with the modern conservative.
No, it isn't. But I find it interesting, one of his main points and how he ends the piece, just to read the final two sentences.
Go for it.
Ronald Reagan would not have been welcome at today's CPAC or a Tea Party rally, but he would not have wanted to be there either. Neither do I. So, I mean, for a long time I was thinking I was the only one that any of this stuff was bothering, but apparently I have some support from Mickey Edwards, who's...
Well, Mickey went over to your side long before you were there.
I don't know. If you read his piece, he certainly doesn't seem like any kind of liberal to me. He's talking about classical conservatism.
Yes, but he came out with his a statement much similar to your blog post years ago.
What bothers him is the intrusion of what has become the religious right, the influence of the religious right on the modern conservative movement, and their intrusion on civil liberties. That's clearly a strong point for him, and as it is for me. So, you know, there are conservatives who agree with a lot of my positions, you know.
You know, with that, we could transfer to Mount Vernon or Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mount Vernon, I wrote a short piece about that. I don't really see much in it that's particularly groundbreaking. It's sort of a bland statement. It really, it just talks about general principles and conservative values and the Constitution a lot. And what I found most striking about it was that given the participation of Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, I would have expected a more pronounced influence or a pronounced focus on the social conservative agenda, anti-abortion, creationism, et cetera, the whole agenda of the religious right. And it looks to me like whoever wrote this thing was really trying to downplay that side of the movement, even though Tony Perkins did sign it. Interestingly, yesterday's...
Can I stop you there? Were you encouraged by that? I mean, I understand...
Wasn't encouraged, because what I see it doing is they're basically just trying to keep it on the down low. You know, they're not really... they're not changing anything. And in fact, if you watched the Chris Matthews show yesterday, he was at CPAC and he interviewed Tony Perkins, and it's quite clear that, you know, his beliefs haven't changed one bit. And he's basically, you know, if you get right down to it, this is a guy who's a theocrat who thinks that the U.S. Constitution should be replaced by something more in line with biblical principles. And he's got a whole, you know, background that I find very troublesome that we can either go into or not, which includes associations with David Duke. So, and this is one of the signers of the Mount Vernon statement. Now, there were some other signers who obviously had less political baggage. But like I say, I think it was a bland statement. I don't really think it does much of anything. And one of the signers, Richard Viguerie, two days before the statement was released, said exactly what I'm saying. He said it's a bland nothing, and it could have been written by John Boehner or Tom DeLay. So, you know, this is really a big nothing. And then 2 days later, he came out and vigorously promoted it after signing it, which I found a little odd.
Well, have you seen David Frum's criticism of it?
Whose criticism?
David Frum.
Oh, no, I have not read that one.
Okay. Well, Frum basically said something along the lines of the Plain Post, but then he went on to say, you know, there's nothing in here that talks about what to do about jobs, about national security.
That's right. Nothing specific, yeah.
Right, but there's nothing relevant to it. And the statement itself, of course, we'll link to it, is very heavily on it. In fact, it's subtitled Constitutional Conservatism.
Right.
And so what I wanted to ask David Frum, and I'll ask you, is, you know, do you think that the Constitution itself is irrelevant to people today? Do you see anything in the constitutional concerns that people?
No, absolutely. I don't think it's irrelevant at all. In fact, in a lot of ways, I think, you know, I call myself a pretty strict constitutionalist, but with a caveat that I do think that there are some things that the Constitution did not foresee and could not foresee because of the way modern society has developed. So I think there's always going to be the need for a body like the Supreme Court to adjudicate these things and decide where those issues, you know, where the boundaries are between what the Constitution says and what makes sense in the modern world. So I'm not a strict constitutionist in the sense that I believe that every single word of it must be followed to the letter. I think there is room for interpretation, but absolutely, the Constitution is very important. I mean, it informs everything that the government does.
Yeah, and that was part of what I thought the statement was a good start. But, you know, before I read the statement, I had a very specific question in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to see something in this statement that says, if I'm a congressman from, let's say, Wisconsin, and I respect the conservative movement, I want to know how I should vote on the Troubled Asset Relief Program. I wanted to know if this statement would have anything in it that would tell me to vote no on that bill. Because, you know, if it doesn't have so egregious violation of separation of powers as TARP, if it doesn't have anything in it that clearly delineates, that says somebody who votes for TARP cannot be considered conservative, then I was like, I don't really know how much point there is to this statement.
Yeah.
And I read through the statement, I was like, there are some things in here which you could say, go to that, but there's other stuff that does it. And so I guess for me, if it wasn't a strong enough a denunciation of some of the constitutional violations that occurred, and of course, this goes almost without saying, that you know, TARP was passed and signed by Bush. Recent conservative administration.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree that it wasn't a strong enough statement of anything, basically. But in a way, this is symptomatic of the larger problem with the Republican Party right now. They seem to be leaderless. I mean, they're drifting. They can't come up with any actual programs or solutions. And this statement is a perfect example of that. It's just a bunch of bland nonsense. And I think Richard Viguerie, in his original statement, called it pablum, which is a pretty accurate description. It's just it's vague talk about the Constitution. You know, the Constitution is wonderful. We all love the Constitution, but it's like this is what you bring out when you want to get a quick round of applause. It's like the musician hitting the high note. You know, I mean, it means nothing. But it gets the applause, and I have a feeling that this is a symptom of the larger problem in the conservative movement right now. They don't really stand for anything.
Well, you mentioned that the conservative movement is leaderless, so I guess that is a good transition to our last topic. Sarah Palin, and will she run for president?
The leader of the conservative movement. Oh my goodness! Whoa.
Okay, we won't call her that today. We'll focus on a much more narrow question. Will she run for president?
I think she's going to, yes. I've been saying this all along, that all of this is positioning her to run for president, including the Fox News affiliation and her book and the speaking tour and all of that. So, I think she is going to, and I think there are plenty of people who will want her to.
Yeah, I mean, you say positioning for, and I guess, I mean, I have a very firm belief that yes, she absolutely is going to run, and
I'm sorry,
when I say
that.
Run, I don't think she's in it to win it. She's gonna run, but that's because of who she is now. She is a political, pop culture, media figure, and in that role, that requires her.
You're breaking up there.
Con,
you're breaking up. Your voice is breaking up. I can't really hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said that basically Sarah Palin, in her new role, requires her to run for president. It's assumed as part of the figure that she's going to do that.
She is pretty much, she was asked the question directly, and she said, basically, yes, I would consider running for president, which, you know, that's a step further than the normal political disclaimer.
Right, she has to now. She has to.
Yes.
Now. Once she says no, she becomes a lot less interesting.
That's right.
Right, it's the flirtation of it, which makes people tune in, make it more exciting, make sign more books, make people turn into Fox News, etc. That, you know, she's the Palin brand now, and being part of, you know, the Palin corporation now, running for president. Now, does that mean she's going to have a real Iowa operation that's going to make a good showing on the night of the caucuses, or that is she going to really have the force in New Hampshire to be knocking on doors, etc.? I don't think so. But she is going to go to all the cattle calls. She is going to go to all the events where all the rest of the candidates are. She is going to work her way into all those debates. She is going to do all those things. So she's definitely running. But I don't think she's in it to win it.
Well, we'll have to see whether she's in it to win it. I actually think it would be a major disaster if she were to run. I think that it's a way to virtually guarantee another election for Barack Obama. And I would be really disappointed to see that instead of someone who's more of a conservative intellectual figure, you know, someone who has some gravitas, you might say, someone who can actually discuss issues with authority instead of, Sarah Palin.
So is there anyone from any party or movement that you are excited about?
I'm still, out of all the major conservative figures right now, Mitt Romney is probably... You know, he's probably the closest to being someone that I might be able to support, but He is also pandering, as most of the modern conservative movement does, to the religious right. You know, he went and spoke to the Family Research Council's recent, what was it called, Take Back America conference, which is it's like the parade of the theocrats, and it was I find that very troubling right there. And that's
did you see his speech yesterday?
Yes, I did see that. Uh huh.
Did you notice?
Basically attacking Barack Obama.
Did you notice that he left anything out?
Yes, he didn't mention the social conservative agenda, which was, but the whole speech was basically an attack on Barack Obama. You know, a long sustained recitation of all the usual attack points on Obama. So
that's not true. He also said Scott Brown was a great guy.
Yeah, right. So anyway, I mean, he's actually one of the. At least he's intellectually honest. He's not a creationist, for example. In fact, he's spoken out against teaching intelligent design in schools. Something, by the way, that your own organization, the Heritage Foundation, supports. So I'm much more drawn to Mitt Romney than any of the other politicians at this event. You know, all of the other ones, as far as I can tell, if I go down the list, I'm reading it: Dick Armey, John Ashcroft, Michelle Bachmann, Glenn Beck's not a politician, but Bolton, Breitbart, Jim DeMint, Newt Gingrich, all creationists. Ron Paul, Tim Pawlenty, Mike Pence, creationists. Marco Ruby, every single one. Rick Santorum, you know, every single politician at this event is a creationist. Mitt Romney is really the only one. I often wonder how he reconciles that.
Yeah, I don't know if I can confirm all those people you named are creationists.
Well, they are, believe me, I've researched
them. We already covered last time that's an issue that worries me a lot less than it worries you.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, that your own organization is promoting it, so...
That's actually news to me, and part of my job is knowing all of our positions. You'll have to send me the paper.
Search the website. Search your own website, and you'll find, quite a few articles promoting intelligent design, so...
Yeah, maybe you could send one of those, and we could put that in the sidebar.
Okay.
I'd be interested in seeing one of those.
Sure.
Cool. Well, we're running up on 40 minutes. I think we covered CPAC pretty well. Is there anything else you want to cover before we sign off?
Yeah, I think we're pretty good there. They ought to have something out of that to stir up some more controversy.
Fair enough. Always good talking to you, Charles.
Yes, nice talking to you, Con.
Okay, take care. Talk to you.